Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mean. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Al Mean.
Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds. In this 13 weeks, we are exploring our relationship with ourselves, the divine within, and every other week, we explore relationships with those in our world. Today, we explore self-reliance in relationship. This follows on last week's presentation of the power of self-reliance within. Today, find out with us how self-reliance is the key to a successful relationship and how all life follows the same developmental stages found in a healthy, self-reliant relationship. Also, learn with us today why uniformity stifles growth, while unity within diversity promotes growth in relationship. I want to read you something that I find to be the epitome of self-reliance in the words of Emerson in his essay on self-reliance. Live no longer to the expectation of these deceived and deceiving people with whom we converse. Say to them, O father, O mother, O wife, O brother, O friend, I have lived with you after appearances hitherto. Henceforward, I am the truth. Be it known unto you that henceforward I obey no law less than the eternal law. I will have no covenants, but proximities. I shall endeavor to nourish my parents, to support my family, to be the chaste husband of one wife. But these relations I must fill after a new and unprecedented way. I appeal from your customs. I must be myself. I cannot break myself any longer for you or you. If you can love me for what I am, we shall be the happier. If you cannot, I will still seek to deserve that you should. I will not hide my tastes or aversions. I will so trust that what is deep is holy, that I will do strongly before the sun and moon whatever inlie rejoices me, and the heart appoints. If you are noble, I will love you. If you are not, I will not hurt you and myself by hypocritical attentions. If you are true, but not in the same truth with me, cleave to your companions. I will seek my own. I do this not selfishly, but humbly and truly. It is alike your interest and mine and all men's, however long we have dwelt in lies, to live in truth. Does this sound harsh today? You will soon love what is dictated by your nature as well as mine. And if we follow the truth, it will bring us out safe at last. But so you may give these friends pain. Yes, but I cannot sell my liberty and my power to save their sensibility. Shakespeare has said, to thine own self be true, and it must needs follow as night the day, that thou cannot be false to another. Beloved ones, self-reliance is one of the seven supporting attitudes that we mention in the book Journey to the Heart of God. As having been studied in temples anciently in the feminine mystical traditions, as one of those seven supporting attitudes that assist in opening sound chambers within the DNA, and that it actually promotes ascension. So it is, in other words, a supporting attitude of one of seven that promotes higher states of being. Great gains in self-reliance have been made during the last 25 to 30 years, in large part as the result of an escalating destructuring of family life. For every loss, there is a gain. And in this instance, both men and women have been plunged into single parent units where they have had to play many roles and often find at the end of a weary day that the only nurturing afforded them will have to be self-nurturing. Furthermore, there's no one to fight their battles. And after bitter lessons, they may also be fortunate enough to stumble onto the great truth that has separated genius from mediocrity, that no one can advise us on a course of action, not even the angels themselves. They can only illuminate eternal truths that might apply, you see, as guiding lights upon our way. Our paths, unique only to us, lie on an uncharted course, and the compass is found in the higher wisdom whispered through the promptings of our hearts. Then, suddenly one day, a starkly revealed truth emerges and we realize that our being is our sustenance. Ponder that thought just for a moment. Our being is our sustenance. Such a realization is the very foundation of self-reliance. It's only the beginning, however, for the edifice to be built upon it takes the painstaking effort of casting off the enslavement of social conditioning and laying the bricks of original thought, moment by luminous moment. Original thought doesn't ask whether the world can understand it, for its origin is the heart of the infinite. And to enter there, linear and superficial thought must be left at the gate. The world wallows in conformity, and society favors mediocrity over greatness. For most of you listening to my words today, you are the system busters of the world, because you are the way showers. You have been sent in to assist in this huge planetary ascension that began in February of 2005. It is therefore the death knell of your destiny to be a conformist, to go according to the flow, to do what others have taught you as propriety, which is only their sense of values. To ask for either its understanding or its approval of the world is to kill originality. The ego who has seen the whole valley from the higher thermals above, attempting to mingle with the flocks of birds on the ground, would only find a rejection. For the pigeons know that in the presence of the ego, their own lack of sight is made all the more apparent. Relinquishing either the need to please or the need to have others conform to our expectations creates a sovereignty and peace of mind. When Emerson wrote that little bit that I read to you from his essay on self-reliance, he basically states that he's not only intending to set himself free from the expectations of others, but in doing so, he sets them free as well. So, it would be as though instead of walking around with an umbilical cord that we are trying to plug into another, we were to plug it back into ourselves. We would find ourselves then as our own source of strength and nurturing, self-supporting and self-referring for approval. That is such an important one. The self-referring for approval is the real hallmark of a master. To such a one, life may bring whatever it will, for nothing can rob or erode their greatest treasure, the peace of mind inner sovereignty brings. I have taken some time to study what it is that is the core grief of humanity. And in fact, in Journey to the Heart of God, I write about the tools to develop to deal with this core grief of humanity and what I found it to be after truly months of research was the loss of sovereignty. So many things have been, quote, done to humanity. And although I know that at a very much higher level, We undertook to do these things because we have become a major pivot point in what has become not only a global, but a cosmic ascension into higher frequencies. It is for this that man took on the archetypal role to solve much for others. And those that have wanted very much to keep this from rising, for in rising they would either lose their life or lose control, have tampered with humanity. In addition, not only natural cataclysms that occurred due to the use of imbalancing laws such as black magic or anything that is self-centered has caused catastrophes upon the planet, major ones, and also they have been engineered with the hopes that the shock of them would drain enough energy that it would cause a loss of consciousness to humanity as they started to raise in consciousness. And it was seen by many that we would become those way showers. So this loss of sovereignty, this feeling as though we are sitting ducks, waiting for some event to rob us of health and home and life, and also seeing ourselves as victims of things like health, when in fact, health is but the signals that there is something in our life that is not self-empowering. Self-reliance, the core of self-empowerment. We shall now take a break for commercials, and when we come back, we will see what core values assist in helping us be more self-reliant and self-empowered individuals.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almeen's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Elvispada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almeen's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almeen. To learn more about Almeen and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
We have Master Jean that we've had before on the program. She's a very beloved friend and happens to live in my same town. She's moved here so that I hope, amongst other things, we can be closer, but also because of the beautiful scenery that she enjoys. And I want to welcome her onto our show today. And what we are going to be discussing are the sexual stages of mankind. Because when these are interrupted, either because of sexual abuse or trauma, or the interference with the natural development of these sexual stages that bring about, again, self-reliance versus addiction, if they are followed all the way through. If they are not, the beginning point is that you should at least be aware what stage you are stuck in and what it was that happened during that stage that either robbed you of it or in some way interfered with it to create distortion. Now, beloved light listeners, here is how I found this pattern that underlies everything. For instance, 2 weeks from now, we will be discussing conflict resolution in relationships. The same pattern of the sexual stages is found there. We will look at the social stages that occur in societies and in relationships today. That too follows a specific pattern. like the Fibonacci sequence, once you know about it, you find it everywhere. In the nautilus shell, in the seeds of a sunflower, in the pine cone, everywhere. This specific pattern I discovered in 2005 on November the 5th, when I had the most incredible encounter with the infinite and discovered what Toltec seers had looked for eons. They were aware that the cosmos existed out of four great bands of frequency and that it was mapped out in the lower two realms, but they had no inkling of what it was like in the upper realms that they could not yet access. And in that day, I was able to solve this mystery. The frequency bands followed a specific pattern. And I'm going to ask the Master Gene to assist us today by giving us the sexual stages of mankind that follow this exact same pattern as life developed itself. What would be the first sexual stage of mankind, and when is that occurring?
The first stage of mankind is seeking the fullness, and this is during the pre-adolescent period. Boys and girls at this time gravitate towards the same-sex groups in order to learn more about what it means to be a boy or a girl. By observing that in their same-sex peers, boys build keep-out girls, clubhouses, and girls often view boys as the enemy as they huddle together in giggling groups. If sexual activity does occur, it usually involves same-sex masturbation or exploration of the self through self-masturbation.
In other words, this first stage of seeking sameness, which happens, as she says, during pre-adolescence, is like finding mirrors to show ourselves what it means to be a boy or what it means to be a girl. And during that stage, opposites are shunned. And that is a general rule of thumb because, again, life can arrest this or interfere with this natural development. And what about the second stage?
The second stage is seeking sameness with interest in the opposite. And this occurs during adolescence. While still staying in the safety of the same-sex peer groups, adolescents now develop an obsessive interest in the opposite sex. During this stage, the quest to understand their own sexuality continues, but with increasing curiosity about the opposite sex.
So in other words, they stay in that same-sex peer groups because it's safe there. It's something familiar. But now they put one toe out with great curiosity to see what the opposite sex is like.
That's right. Boys spend hours lifting weights, considering cars to drive when they get old enough to have a license and other manly pursuits that are culturally appropriate. It is a time of proving themselves as a man. Hours are spent studying and obsessively speculating about the opposite sex.
And incidentally, in cultures where there are rites of passage, the Jewish culture, Native American cultures, in Africa, multiple cultures that I encountered when I lived in Africa. These rites of passage make less of an obsessive need to prove themselves because the rites of passage declare them to be a man or they are now a young woman.
Please continue. That's interesting. During the same time, girls spend a great deal of time with their same-sex peers learning to become a woman. They study magazines, makeup, and fashion. They worry endlessly about their bodies and appearances, fed by the unrealistic portrayal of the feminine ideal the media gives. They speculate in groups about the opposite sex. Generally, if sex does occur with the opposite sex, they retreat back into the same-sex group as the main support group after the encounter.
And another area where we find this disrupted is where both parents are working, there's very little interaction, and there's very little mentoring. For example, the obsessiveness that they find, and also, incidentally, the control that the peer group at this point, which becomes so vitally important, has over a young boy or a young girl, is lessened when there is mentoring from parents. If the mother takes time to explore with her young girl what it is like to be a woman. If that connection isn't broken from childhood between mother and daughter or father and son, at this time, the child is more open, the young person, I suppose, is more open to taking their advice. You can't ignore them for their early childhood and then jump in at this point. And even where parents do work and time is at a minimum because of the need to provide well for their children, taking quality time with them in the weekend, one-on-one time if needs be, is very, very important. Thank you, and please tell us what is next.
The third stage is understanding the opposite by experiencing it within the familiar. This occurs during the late teens and early 20s. Cliques or groups of both sexes with similar interests form so that they may study each other in the safety of the group. Sororities, the jocks and cheerleaders, the intellectuals, the rebels, and other groups with similar characteristics form.
And you know what's so interesting? We have spoken often about how identity is such a prison bar in terms of finding the freedom that one wants as a master. And it appears that at this point, where is, you know, as she says, the late teens, early 20s, we have already identified ourselves, either by what others see ourselves as or what we see ourselves as. So that is a problem, because now when you have identity, you start to live it out. And now the programming takes over in a very, very big way. Please continue.
Sexual encounters can now be explored with one another within the safety of a support group with similar values. At a time when they are still unsure about their sexuality, their peers mirror to them that they are acceptable through their sameness. Unfortunately, a similar reason forms the basis of many friendships, locking people into approved stagnation.
In other words, if all your friends think exactly the same way you do, nobody challenges you. And when there is no challenging of the status quo, it becomes a very stagnant pond.
That's true. The sexual relationships are superficial during this stage. They are not interested in the deep exploration of their emotions and minds of their partners, but rather in broadening their experiences.
Okay. And now before we go to that fourth stage, this would be a good time for our listeners to do a little bit of self-work, which we do every other week. And I'm going to ask you to look at areas where you have identified with the roles that you play or with the labels on personal identities given to you by self or by others. Please grab hold of a pen and paper. Let's play you some music and define those areas that have become your prison bars.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes all barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almaine. To learn more about Almaine and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
We were speaking to the Master Gene about the sexual stages of man and how it needs to follow a very specific pattern, which is the very pattern in which life itself developed. and that these actually are four great frequency bands that spans the existence of the cosmos, and in fact is the nature of the four directions. What the four directions are simply the frequencies represented by these four stages of developing life. We are now on the fourth stage, and that has to do with sexual development. Then we'll see how relationship itself, if it is a self-reliant, healthy relationship, develops according to the same pattern. Master Jean, what would be the fourth stage of sexuality? We've looked at seeking sameness, but with interest in opposite, and then understanding the opposite by experiencing it within the familiar as being the first three stages. What would be the fourth?
The fourth is experiencing the opposite, and this occurs in the mid-20s and later. During the mid-20s and later, isolated relationships form, and the association with peer groups becomes more peripheral. The opposite sex is now studied in depth as we search to understand our own inner opposite gender through our partners. The emotions and thoughts of partners become as important as the physical aspects of the relationship.
So in other words, at this point, the real opposite study takes place. And this would be occurring in the mid to late 20s. This gives way to having an in-depth relationship. Sexuality is now not just sexuality. It matters what your partner feels, what their desires are, what their fantasies are. A deeper component becomes. And as we have studied in our previous talks that we've had here on the show, sexuality and spirituality at this point really can go hand in hand with a deeper understanding. Let's also take a look at relationship and how, in fact, it also follows those stages. And if it doesn't, you're in a codependent relationship that in some way has become needy, and it needs to be reevaluated. What would you say would be the first stage of the social relationship stages? And, of course, this also is the same in cultures, not
well,
just one-on-one, right?
Right. The first stage is dependence. And it's in this stage similarities are stressed. Couples experience this as the initial stage of being in love. They feel euphoric because they see themselves in the mirror of the other person. Culturally, this manifests as tribal life where the individual is expected to behave in a certain way in exchange for the tribe's support.
So in other words, this is very similar to that wonderful feeling of being cherished, of being taken care of, because if you saw in the sexual stages, it's the stage of the pre-adolescent, the child that's protected by mommy and daddy. And it is the coziest place in the world to be, beloved ones, this tribal life. But it is also the place of the least growth. It is the place that feels so comfortable that you don't want to change it. Hence, force change comes about. For example, our tribal peoples have had a most horrific and unpleasant experience where cultures have come in and basically robbed them of their way of life. But why? That's not an accident, and none of us are victims. Why is because of the resistance to changing something that felt so very comfortable. And so for very, very many thousands of years, very little growth as a society took place where there was total dependence on one another. In the love stage, oh, I know he's my mate. He also likes chocolate. Can you believe it? We like the same color. I mean, it's almost ridiculous for somebody watching from the outside in. But it is finally, I'm back to that stage of sameness that was experienced in pre-adolescence, which is a very, very comforting place to be. Hence the euphoria of the first stage of being in love where we only look for sameness. What would be the second stage?
The second stage is codependence. Some individuality is expressed, but there is still a strong desire to identify with each other, and no one steps too far out of the box. Many tribal members in North America are in this stage where they live in the city but retain strong ties of dependence with the tribe.
And, you know, another thing to consider with this, codependence is actually, I believe there was a study done, I'm not 100% sure that it was the American Psychiatric Board or that there's a board for psychologists that found this, but they found that it was over 90% that they estimated of all relationships in America to be based on codependence. Codependence is why our relationships would break up, because if one or the other partner wants to grow out of it, then immediately it no longer works. And previous generations have been locked into this codependent relationship. Women saw themselves just a few generations ago unable to take care of themselves. Society didn't allow it. Men saw themselves in a specific role. They were dependent on each other for their survival. And this codependence allowed very little exploration of that which is different. But it did occur. Now, with codependence, why the problem happens is as follows. Codependence follows a very specific triangle. And the triangle says, I adore you because of all the things that are the same. Then the differences start showing up. Now, I'm going to try and control these differences, so leg two is control, so that you don't step too far out of this very cozy box of sameness. So the control happens in the second leg. And then leg three, for somebody that stays in codependence, is usually a huge blow-up in relationship. Because you do not allow me to control you, I feel unloved by you. And hence, I feel betrayed, and there's huge rage and anguish. And that's why relationships have been breaking up one after the other with such huge feelings of betrayal, because after a while it becomes what psychologists call an engram, a blister spot on the psyche. And what would be the third stage?
The first stage is independence. In personal interaction, each individual becomes almost desperate to find his or her own identity. Differences now become emphasized. In the modern mechanized societies, all types of insurance are needed since there is no tribal support.
And, you know, in apartments, people live without knowing their neighbor's name. I don't know my neighbor's name. And I live in suburbia in America and don't have a clue who my next-door neighbors are. This is part of that independence. But, you see, if I need them, the neighbors are not there either because there's no relationship cultivated. The independence, the downside of it is a great loneliness and a longing for a tribe. But the tribe tends to want to control. And so there is this little feeling that there is something more to the tribe than what has previously been. And that's accurate. We used to speak in relationship about that 7-year itch. When people say they're seeking their self-reliance in the form of seeking themselves, they feel, because they've stayed in codependence up till then, and of course all things are sped up, and every relationship is individual, but there is the 7-year mark where children are now a little bigger, you know, acquisitions have been made by the family, so now individuals start saying, who am I? I've lost myself in the family. So we next have interdependence, the fourth stage. If stage three can be survived, this stage brings more stability. The individuals are secure in their relationships and supportive of each other's differences. This is the template for communal living for the future. A group lives together because of a common goal, voluntarily commits certain contribution, and is free to express and grow in diversity. Unity within diversity. The fastest way for growth to take place. In tribal life, we have uniformity, the slowest way for it to take place. Join us after this commercial break, and we will further look at self-reliance in relationship. Thank you for joining us on Walking Between the Worlds.
Hey, In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Elvispada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almaine. To learn more about Almaine and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Now, it doesn't mean, just the way that Emerson said as I read that first opening piece to our show today, it doesn't mean that we don't support our parents, that we are irresponsible with our relationships. In fact, responsibility is the core of self-reliance, because responsibility to others starts by being first responsible for ourselves. To my own being, I must be true, he said. So that is where responsibility starts. When that core responsibility is not there, beloved ones, we save instead of support. And in saving others around us, we deny them their growth. One of the greatest impediments to the progress of light workers is a misplaced sense of responsibility. The misguided and deep-seated feeling that we need to feel guilty about flourishing when another does not. See, that's part of the old leftovers from the tribe. The tribe didn't like somebody to shine too brightly. It showed the rest of them up. So everybody dimmed their lights to conformity. We often seem to think that somehow we serve life best when we join others in their blind victimhood, or that we dare not be happy until we have saved others. We view happiness as something we must deserve, rather than the birthright of man. Instead of letting our light shine and becoming one of the way showers or light beacons of the planet, we sink back into the misery of man, wearing the ball and chain of guilt and the need to save, we are prevented from flying upon the winds of destiny. When we embark upon the path of enlightenment, we must release others to the responsibility of their higher divine selves. With the exception of our responsibility to our minor children, we are responsible only for ourselves. If we can unfold into our godhood, we can raise the consciousness of every man, woman, and child on earth. Our greatest contribution always is through the altered frequency we emit as we become filled with light, and not through what we do. This pure frequency changes everything it touches. To be responsible for oneself is the core of an attitude that refuses to save those who manipulate through ineptness. Manipulation by those who shirk taking responsibility for their own life can include the following. Confusion. Confusion and obsessing about the questions is a choice. And as long as others who not feeling lovable settle for feeling needed are around to save us, we do not need to develop self-reliance. Self-destructiveness. You know, there are those around us that find no value in their own life, but if you keep trying to rescue them, they think, oh, well, it must have value. Also, if I have not dealt with feeling unloved by parents, I place you in a saving parent role, which makes me feel loved, because now you're my surrogate parent. I also sometimes The manipulators around us want us to help because it keeps them from feeling pain. Pain is the desire for change. If we keep someone from feeling pain, we also keep them from change. Through indulging them, we inadvertently keep them in their agony. The key is to organize instead of agonize. To help construct a way out of that which needs to be changed is better than wallowing in the pain until it becomes a trusted companion. And really what I mean by that is some people come into my classes, but pain over the Holocaust, over this, over that, has become their new identity. And they're a little scared to let it go because then who am I? I lived for saving others and now I have to look at myself. The blame game. If I can get you to feel guilty about being successful, for example, you will keep trying to compensate, making me able to control you. Or if I rage at you and keep you off balance by continually having to defend yourself, I have you hooked into my game. Beloved ones, the ragers in your life, there is very often a deliberate game to keep you from being in balance and whole. This manipulation by those around you who choose to be victims, who choose to be confused and choose to be in a position where you think you have to save them. Consider the words of the Buddha when he said, 5 seconds of divine love, by divine love he means unconditional love, is worth 1,000 bowls of food to the poor. In other words, our greatest responsibility comes through our beingness, not our doingness. Certainly, help them find a way out of their misery. It might just be that they don't see it. Even help them with step one and step two. But if they're not willing to get off that treadmill of misery, it is because they enjoy being there at a very deep level. Now, there are responsibilities we cannot shirk, and I'm going to ask the Master Gene to help me by giving you these.
These responsibilities are as follows. Our fiduciary responsibility to minor children. Responsibilities we have contracted to perform, such as a job we undertake to perform where others rely on our fulfilling it. To speak our highest wisdom when asked for it or when a situation presents itself where it is needed. The responsibility not to abuse the parental counselor role we undertake that provides the opportunity for another to become vulnerable. The reason why a psychologist or spiritual counselor cannot have sexual relationships with a client. To lend a helping hand when we have the capability to help another out of a crisis or a stuck place in order to move to a higher order.
And if we may just look at these for just a few seconds. You see, in this new way of living, which is unity within diversity, interdependence versus dependence or codependence, we do undertake certain responsibilities. But let's say we choose not to keep them. It is our responsibility to either hire or make some agreement with somebody that can fill those spots willingly and gladly and efficiently in our place. We don't let the tribe down just because we are exploring ourselves. But our show has reluctantly come to an end. We have so much information to share with you, and these shows just always get shorter, it seems, although, of course, the clock says differently. My brothers and sisters, join us next week for Mystical Keys to Ascended Mastery, the relationship with ourselves and the divine. Thank you so much for being our listeners on Walking Between the Worlds. My love to you always.
We hope you have enjoyed today's show, Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mean.